Allen had is one of the more brilliant football minds in the NFL. The problem is, A, he's outdated and antiquated in his system. We're still calling plays from 1993.
Jerry Jones paid the first round pick price. He paid the gold price and not the iron price. Is because they needed to distract everybody from how freaking horrible the Dallas Cowboys looked on Sunday. You can easily give those guys contracts that will slot in for that $8.5 million worth of salary cap space and still have money to do the other things that we would like to see.
Exactly. Other than the ketchup bottle. Good grief. Why was that a national headline? I don't understand. But anyway, and plus ketchup is trash. So for me, that was a double whammy of hell. Preach. No. Like a double whammy of get the hell out of my face.
All right, you are now rocking with the best. It is time for another exciting, exhilarating, and awesome episode of Catch This Fade Podcast.
The time for fun and games is over, feeble-minded fools.
I am, of course, your host, KD Drummond. That is my man, 5 grand. Say what's up to the people, Pat.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome back. It is the newest episode of Catch This Fade. Thank you so much for always tuning in to hear myself and my compatriot KD Drummond of the Cowboys Wire say what we need to say regarding the Dallas Cowboys. And sometimes it's, it's positive and sometimes it's negative, but it's always a good time.
Yeah, in 2018, it's a roller coaster, but we have a mixed bag basically representing the season for y'all today. And, of course, Patrick Walker, you can find him, Patrick No C. Walker, at Voice of the Star on Twitter. I am at KD Drummond NFL. Please follow us and make sure you're subscribing on iTunes so that you do not miss any of these scintillating episodes of Catch This Fade. Subscribe, have them download automatically, and you will always be in the know of what you need to know about these Dallas Cowboys. And what you need to know right now is that it's a brand new day. You look around the landscape of the NFL and you see the Cowboys at 3-4, losing all of their road games. But are you as upset as you were on Sunday? Are you feeling a little bit more positive about the outlook of your favorite team?
Why does it sound like an infomercial when you're about to offer like some type of groundbreaking headache medicine?
Did your owner go out there and wave the magic wand in front of your eyes and say, poof, have a number one receiver, everything's all good, love me again? Did that happen to you in your football life recently, ladies and gentlemen? If so, you are a Dallas Cowboys fan. Because Jerry Jones went out there, he spent the number one draft pick for 2019, he acquired Amari Cooper, number one wide receiver out of the Oakland Raiders, 2 back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, fallen on some tough times since then, as has the entire Raiders organization. And he is hoping to wash all of that stink off with our Dallas Cowboys. Now, the Cowboys played on Sunday.
That is correct.
The Cowboys lost in one of the most... It wasn't even heartbreaking. Heartbreaking is such a wrong word for it.
It was gut-wrenching. Gut-wrenching.
Gut-wrenching. It left you absolutely pissed off once again for the second time in 3 weeks. At our coaching staff, at least to me. What about you, Pat?
I mean, it didn't piss me off because I saw it coming.
We
all did see it coming because the thing is, when you mentioned the roller coaster ride for 2018, and you're absolutely correct. The problem is, every time the Cowboys do something right in 2018, immediately everybody believes they've turned the corner and things are going to, change going to come. Okay. And I would love to believe that. However, that's not what the trend has shown. And until the trend changes, then the trend hasn't changed. I mean, hashtag science, but literally, this is basic physics. Until something changes, it is literally the same. Okay, so I predicted they'd beat the Jacksonville Jaguars when a lot of people said, oh no, the Jaguars are going to mop the floor with a number one defense. I said, well, this is a team that loves being 500. They go down, up, down, up, down, up. So it was time to go up against the Jags, and they did. And then, drop 40 points on the Jags. That much I did not predict, but that's what they did. And then everybody was like, oh, we've turned the corner again. I said, pump your brakes. You haven't turned the corner until you stack 2 consecutive wins, and I predict that they'll lose against the Redskins. They were 0-3 on the road. They were going into a hostile territory at FedEx Field. This was a Redskins team that they've beaten four times in the past 2 years. So statistically speaking alone, you know how difficult it is to continually win against an NFL team. It's a league built for parity. So eventually they were going to lose. So everything pointed to them losing, and then they did. So when they did, I was shaking my head, not because I was upset, but because I wanted them to prove me wrong, and they just, they did. And they found a way to make the loss worse than it would have already been by coaching at the end of the game. We're still talking about coaching at the end of games.
3 weeks ago, to me. 3 weeks ago, it was a Houston game when the Cowboys went to overtime. They got to the Texans' 41-yard line. They had not been able to make much noise. It was one of the better forays into enemy territory that they had for the game, and they decided to punt on 4th and 1.5, a long one as it was turned by Jason Garrett, and they basically showed zero aggression. 2 weeks later, back on the road again, they were down 20-10. They had a long scoring drive that brought them within 20-17. They kicked the ball off. The Redskins played right into their hands with allowing them to get the ball back with time on the clock. They made it all the way to the Washington 46 with 52 seconds left.
Yeah, it was about the 46-45. Yeah. They were in enemy territory again.
And they did not take a single shot at the end zone. They didn't try to win the game, even though they had all of that momentum. They didn't try to win the game. They played for a field goal. And honestly, on the inside, I laughed my ass off at the irony. I was pissed off as a fan, but I laughed my ass off at the irony of them getting that 1 in a billion home cooking referee 5-yard penalty and then the kick going off of the damn uprights. They played for a field goal, 47 yards, got a penalty, and missed on a kick that if he had kicked that exact same kick from 5 yards closer, it would have made it inside the goalpost, and he clanged it off, and they didn't go to overtime. Who plays for overtime? We're not even going to get into that right now. It served them right for that timid approach to playing football. You can't play like that.
No, you can't, but here we are 2 times in the last 3 weeks. And the irony of it all is earlier in the season, you know, Jason Garrett was asked about if the Cowboys' offense was too conservative, right? And his response was, "I don't know what conservative is." Well,
no, you know,
you know, because you just put it on display twice on the road in big games in a 3-week stretch. Now here you are, 3-4 going into the bye week. And it takes you throwing a first round pick to land a number one wide receiver when you already had a number one wide receiver on your team, you know, just 6 months ago, who was willing to take a pay cut. And my thing is, whether you agree with Dez being released or you don't agree, what we can all agree upon is the fact that the whole wide receiver by committee sell that they were trying to push was garbage then. We said it. When they kept pushing it through the summer, we said this is not going to work. You had people like Tony Romo and a lot of other intelligent football minds that said you're going to have to find a number one wide receiver. And now here we are 7 weeks in. And, you know, that experiment is dead. And it had already died. It died on September 9th. That's why they called Bryce Butler on September 10th. And it got so bad, man. Now you think Bryce Butler was going to be the solution. And that guy ends up 5 games in with the Cowboys. 2 of those games were inactive. 3 total snaps. No catches. Right? But he earned several hundred thousands of dollars film Dak Prescott on a treadmill for Snapchat. So, you know, the coaching and the front office moves, for all of the great things they do, and let's be clear, they do a lot of great things. You look at, you know, you got a lot of all pros on that offensive line. You got Ezekiel Elliott. You got a player like Cole Beasley, who was an undrafted guy. So for all the love we're giving Cole Beasley, let's remember he's undrafted. So that's, you know, that's a huge nod to the scouting department and Will McClay. So you have players like that. You got DeMarcus Lawrence. He's homegrown. right? He didn't come into Dallas as a free agent. He's homegrown and one of the best pass rushers in the league. So you got a lot going on. Jalen Smith, that's a miracle story. That's a huge nod to them as well. But then you have, you know, situations like this where you cut Dez Bryant and then, you know, try to sell yourself on the fact you don't need a top receiver. And then here we are, you know, 6 months later, and you just gave up a first round pick for one. So
that brings us back around full circle to the acquisition of Amari Cooper. Let's, before we start handing out these fades, because we ain't even got started yet, bruh. Before we start handing out these fades that so many people have to catch, let's talk about what Amari Cooper can bring to the table. He's a wide receiver. Let's talk about how he can improve the passing game of the Dallas Cowboys. Now, Cooper is a big dude. He's 6'1". He's a solid 215, 220 type of receiver that can not only position himself properly in order to box out defenders, he also has the speed that the Cowboys have been coveting in building their wide receiver core. Last year, the biggest issue was that they didn't have enough team speed. They went out, they got Deontay Thompson. We'll talk about him in a second. They got Tavon Austin. We'll talk about him in a second. And that added a speed element to the wide receiver game that they weren't fully able to utilize, although Tavon Austin does have the two longest yardage catches of the season for the Dallas Cowboys. They still weren't able to maximize that speed element, and they're hoping that what Amari Cooper brings to the table will help in that regard. He has the speed, he has quality route running, and he has very quick feet that bring him to having a lot of separation from the defenders. That is paramount based on what Dak Prescott is right now as a thrower. They need somebody that can separate from these defenders and give enough room for Dak's inaccurate passes to make their way home.
My thing is, this was supposed to be a quote-unquote Dak-friendly offense, okay? Mm-hmm. And their thought process was, if you take away a number one receiver, then that means Dak Prescott is not going to have to force the ball to a big money guy, okay? Now you have Amari Cooper, and he's going to have to get Cooper those balls.
So exactly. I think that's going to go down in the history of history as one of the worst assessments of football, of a football situation, saying that taking away Dak Prescott's biggest weapons is going to be something that helps him.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, I agree with that. So now we're about to find out who Dak Prescott is, at least to a degree. And the reason I say at least to a degree is because it's funny that we're talking about this right now, because about 10 minutes before we fired up this episode of Catch This Fade, I tweeted out at Voice of the Stars, Shameless Plug, that until Linehan is out of the picture, we're still not going to fully be able to evaluate Dak Prescott. But with the addition of Cooper and his skill set and what he brings to the table, a two-time Pro Bowler, two 1,000-yard seasons, both achieved in his first 2 years in the league, named to the Pro Football Writers Association All-Rookie Team his first year out in 2015. And then you look at the first-round picks at wide receiver over the course of the past 4 years since Cooper came out in 2015, and you can actually justify the first-round pick, even though you might not like the compensation, but you love the move. You can begin to justify that, and I did that in a write-up earlier this week, shortly after the move was made. But I think that if this experiment with Amari Cooper doesn't work, I'm not looking at Amari Cooper saying, oh, well, you know, they should have never given up a first-round pick for you. No. Because I have enough evidence to support it not being Cooper at all. Hey, he just got here. But the problems were here when he arrived. So if it doesn't work going forward, then it's probably going to be due to the same issues going forward that we've seen up to this point, and that's my concern. So a lot of pressure is on Scott Linehan and Dak Prescott right now. Because Amari Cooper's not going anywhere. He has the fifth-year option exercised by the Raiders, so that locks him in with the Cowboys through the 2019 season. I think the Cowboys are going to extend him. I don't think it's out of the question to see them extend him this coming offseason, next few months. You don't give up a first-round pick for a guy that you expect to be gone after a year and nine games.
You certainly don't do that. You don't bring on a guy. I like the fact that Cooper told them, gave them assurances that he did not have a problem with being extended. But in the logical world that we try to exist in here on Catch This Fade, we know that the Cowboys made that trade with the intention of extending Cooper. It has to go horribly wrong for them not to extend that dude. They might be looking for a discount, or he might be saying, hey, wait until I can prove to you guys how good I am so I can charge you what you were going to pay Sammy Watkins last year when they were going to throw that dude $15 million. But I, too, sir, wrote an article when Amari Cooper was signed with the Dallas Cowboys, and I spoke about the fact that this is a true test for Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is also signed through the 2019 season. He was a fourth-round pick. There's no fifth-year option for him. So even though he came into the league a year after Cooper, they are both going to be free agents at the same time. They are going to see what Prescott can do with Cooper, with a number one receiver that isn't the problem child, and I'm using air quotes right now because this isn't what I believe, but this is what the team seems to be throwing out there, with the problem child of Dez Bryant in his ear. You have a number one receiver. You don't have the negatives of what you felt Dak took away from this situation. So now there is not going to be any excuse. Scott Linehan, Kellen Moore, Jason Garrett, the offensive triumvirate that is above in the coaching, in the ear of Dak Prescott coaching, it is now going to be on them to show how good Prescott can be in this situation. Some kind of heads should roll if it doesn't work. At the end of the year, I don't know if they will do that because I don't have any inclination thinking that Jerry Jones will fire Jason Garrett at the end of this season. And I don't think that he would make the ultimatum, but I'm leaning towards that being more possible than anything of him saying, Jason Garrett, you have to fire Scott Linehan or you got to go too.
And there you go. And there you go. That is nail meets head for me. You've seen me say it on Twitter, and you've heard me say it on across several platforms, both radio spots and podcasts. And definitively, I am on this particular hill saying I believe Jason Garrett is going to return for 2019, and at minimum, coach out his final year, his fifth year extension. But I think that they're at a crossroads right now, where Jerry and Stephen Jones are both going to look at Jason Garrett in the next few months, if they haven't already kind of pulled him aside and said, hey, you're not coaching for your job unless you decide that you want to remain tied to the hip of Scott Linehan. And I think finally, the dysfunctional relationship that exists between Garrett and Linehan, mentor, mentee, turned employer, employee, I think Garrett is finally going to come to terms and say, hey, I'm taking back play calling duty. So if things don't go well over the next, let's say, 3 to 4 weeks, I think Linehan's going to be stripped of play calling duties, but he'll still be employed with the team.
Yep,
but that's going to be
at the end of the year. Yep.
There you go. That's going to be the first shot. And the second shot's going to be he's out of here in January.
You have failed this city.
You know, we watch it happen to teams across the league. Excuse me, but you never really see it happen with the Cowboys. But that is such a plausible scenario that it's almost like it's been pre-written. It's like it's in a science book somewhere. Is that science?
Science.
It is science.
Hashtag science.
All right,
man. Undefeated.
Listen, we've been nice enough. We haven't sugarcoated anything, but we haven't really taken the gloves off with these people as we've been discussing this situation. But somebody's got to catch this fade.
Going in, man.
Oh, man. Hey.
Go ahead.
Let me finish wrapping my hands real quick. Okay, cool. Let's do it. Vaseline on the face. We're talking about Scott Linehan, and how appropriate that we are speaking of Scott Linehan, because Scott Linehan, you have to catch this fade again.
Again. Bruh,
again,
you're a two-time winner.
I don't understand what's happening here as far as why there's such a failure to adjust on a consistent basis. Why there's such a failure to replicate success once you locate success. You look at a game like the Jacksonville Jaguars, you drop 40 points on the Jaguars. Now, I said it then, I'll say it now. Here's why Scott Linehan was able to scheme the Cowboys into dropping 40 points on them, the statistically best defense in the NFL. It's because they studied what the Kansas City Chiefs did. The Cowboys have similar personnel, not equal on all accounts, because Dak Prescott still has struggles and Patrick Mahomes is not from this galaxy, okay? But they're both still mobile quarterbacks, right? So that's why you saw Dak Prescott take off and use his legs to a great degree, so forth and so on. So basically what we saw for four quarters was the Cowboys offense mimicking the Kansas City Chiefs. And it worked. It worked. But when it comes to trying to figure out, without any assistance or without much assistance from another team's coach, all right, without assistance from another team's offensive coordinator, why is it so consistently difficult to figure out how to win games offensively with the Cowboys? The defense has it together. This defense has it together. Rob Marinelli and Chris Richard has this defense firing on all cylinders. Are they perfect? Absolutely not. Do they have areas of opportunity? Absolutely. We need more interceptions. We need more forced fumbles and recovered fumbles, okay? Those two categories are kind of the hitch in their wagon right now. They didn't do great against Adrian Peterson in the run game, but let's talk about why they didn't do better against Adrian Peterson in the run game. It's probably because one of their more impactful run stoppers was inactive for Sunday. KD, would you like to guess why he was inactive? it wasn't injury-based.
Was it because they needed to carry four tight ends?
Because Scott Linehan and Jason Garrett wanted to carry four tight ends. Now, I want you to – I don't care what anybody tells you. There is no way that Scott Linehan and Jason Garrett approached Chris Richard and Rob Marinelli and said, hey, do you mind if we take Daniel Ross out of the rotation so that we can play Dalton Schultz? If you think that conversation went well, then you don't know Marinelli and Chris Richard, okay? But Garrett, having the veto power, obviously, he made the executive decision, and you saw what happened. Adrian Peterson was gashing them left and right. He looked as rejuvenated as ever, and that helped the Redskins. That helped lift the Redskins over the Cowboys' defense. But otherwise, I think you put Daniel Ross in that game, and you probably cut Adrian Peterson down to maybe about 65, 70 yards, but that makes it a much more manageable defensive effort. But overall, this defense has been stellar through their first seven games. The offense, however, 0-4 on the road, averaging less than 14 points per game on the road, not much better at home. If you factor in a 40-point nuclear bomb dropped on the best defense in the league. 40 points. It took them dropping 40 points against the Jaguars to ascend to 20 points per game offensively through seven games. That is abysmal. That is 26th overall in the league, and then your passing offense is only putting up 183.1 yards per game on average. That's good enough for fourth worst in the NFL. I said it in July on Catch This Fade. I said it in August on Catch This Fade. I said it in September on Catch This Fade, and I'm saying it again in October on Catch This Fade, and I'm actually tired of saying it, but I want to keep saying it as long as the Cowboys and Scott Linehan force me to say it. This is not a trend. I'm sorry. This is not an aberration. This is not an anomaly. It's not a rarity. The rarity, the anomaly, the aberration is when they have those flash plays, when they drop 40 points in the game and get you all excited and think they're turning the corner. This offense has not turned the corner. They've not shown themselves capable of turning the corner. And I don't think it's because of lack of talent. I think this offense is extremely talented. I think that Dak Prescott, although he has obvious accuracy issues, he has an issue with not pulling the trigger when he needs to. He has an issue with not seeing the entire field. I think that if you put him in the right system, elite defense, elite running back, and above average protection with good weapons, and now, of course, you have a definitive number one in Amari Cooper going forward, everything is in peace. Or everything is in place on the field for Dak Prescott to improve. And that means this Cowboys offense should start picking up rapidly effective November 5th against the Tennessee Titans. But two question marks. And we're about to find out the answers to them. One, is Dak Prescott really that guy? He showed me, and I wrote a column earlier this week that said he can and can't be the franchise quarterback because he's been quite duplicitous over the last, you know, several games, let's say since the middle of 2017 when he got shell-shocked against the Atlanta Falcons. He's not been right since. We've talked about that before, KD, on several occasions. But the onus more so is on Scott Linehan. You couldn't scheme Dez Bryant open, right? You couldn't scheme Cole Beasley open in 2017 when teams started to double and triple team your slot receiver. Okay, and you started to hear Allen Hurns, who we'll talk about here later. You started to hear Allen Hurns voice frustration, and one of his frustrations, even though he said he didn't want to throw anybody under the bus, he pretty much dragged Linehan right in front of the Greyhound.
Oh, yeah, he did. Okay?
By pointing out how horrible the play call was that turned into an interception against for Dak Prescott when he threw it to Deontay Thompson late against the Houston Texans. And now you have Amari Cooper, a definitive and proven 24-year-old two-time Pro Bowler with all pro ability. You gave up a first-round pick for him. If Scott Linehan doesn't make this work, if he does not make this work and continues to be a person that facilitates the regression of a quarterback that you're trying your best to justify giving a second contract to that could be worth upwards of $100 million. He has to go. He has to go as soon as possible. And I think as soon as possible, is it logistically right now? Because they're 3-4, they're still in the hunt, unfortunately. Because the NFC East is trash right now. So the fact that you're still in the hunt is great. But the fact that 3-4 still keeps you in the hunt, here's why it's unfortunate. It's because it builds a false sense of hope. So for everyone saying, well, all you got to do is get in the tournament, agreed. But what about the 9-7 Giants? Agreed. This is not that team. That team had a better offensive coordinator. That team did have an elite defense. But I just don't see anybody right now, and this obviously could change in December because teams change. We're in midseason right now. But right now, in the NFC East, we're not even talking about the Giants. They're not worth my breath. Redskins, Eagles, Cowboys. Any one of these teams that wins the NFC East, if they're still in the current form they're in when they do it at the end of December, they're going to be one and done in the playoffs, so it won't matter anyway.
There's no doubt of that.
Yeah, and that's my thing. It's chasing the NFC East, the reason you're chasing it is because none of these teams are good enough to get a wild card. To get in the playoffs, in the NFC East this year, you're going to have to win the division. 8-8 probably does it. More realistically, probably 9-7. We'll see how that shakes out. But there's nothing – like right now, even if the Cowboys win the NFC East, there's nothing about this offense right now. And we'll see how it works with Amari Cooper in it. There's nothing about this offense that makes me think that they're going to, you know, go win a playoff game in January. Not with this offensive coordinator. Get me a new play caller. Or give me Jason Garrett as the play caller until you get me a new play caller for the long term. Whatever the case may be, Scott Linehan is one of the more brilliant football minds in the NFL. The problem is, A, he's outdated and antiquated in his system. We're still calling plays from 1993. Literally. This is not a joke, ladies and gentlemen. We're still calling some plays from 1993. They're still in the playbook. Okay, you look at someone like Sean McVay absolutely killing the game and some of these other younger guys who are innovating as opposed to, you know, trying to force their own edict onto everybody. So, Scott Linehan, my knuckles hurt from fading you, but you got to keep catching it as long as you keep not doing your job on a consistent basis.
Listen, Linehan got to get all of the fade. He definitely deserves it. I've been right there with you the entire time talking about Linehan. You know I love numbers beyond the regular stats that you find in your everyday paper. When it comes to DVOA, DVOA is defense adjusted value over average. It basically says how good your offense is compared to what the average offense would be in the exact same game situation that you found yourself in on a play-by-play basis. So, the Cowboys, when they lost and had zero quarterbacks, none in 2015, they had the worst offense in the league. They were ranked 32nd in DVOA. When they got Prescott and Elliott, they were able to climb all the way up to third. They were third in 2016. So you would imagine that with two young guys, with all of the possibilities that you could have as far as devising an offense and figuring out how to play and building off of what you did one year and making it even more dynamic the next year, they fell to 18th in 2017. They're currently 27th in passing offensive DVOA, passing offense DVOA in 2018. They are in the bottom six teams in the league for a system and players that you've had for now When they play Tennessee, that's going to be Dak Prescott's 40th start.
Yes, sir.
40 games. 40 yes, games that you've had to devise an offense around this personnel that's basically been the same, save for the 6 games that Elliott was suspended for. And this is the best that you've been able to come up with. You got to go.
You got to get out of here, man.
You got to go.
Next thing smoking. You know what I mean?
So when you said earlier that the ultimatum is going to come down and he can have, it might come from up high. Jason, you need to take over the play calling duties in the next month if things don't straighten out with the addition of Cooper. And again, the Cowboys have the possibility, because the East is so bad, that they can still win the division and go on a magical run. I'm not ruling that out whatsoever. They definitely have talent. They just need to figure out what to do with it. I don't have confidence they'll figure it out, but it is possible that they'll figure it out. But the
You don't think
based on I think that our defense is good enough as it continues to evolve, if they continue letting Jordan Lewis on the field, and if they continue to evolve with what we're seeing, Irving starts to bring more pressure, Gregory brings more pressure to go along with what we know Lawrence can do. I see that they have the talent, and based on getting their legs under them with Irving and Gregory, I think they have the pass rush to make this one of those defenses that can truly force turnovers and win games for them, not just keep them in games. I think they have the talent level to do with. So all they need is just a competent effort. And if you look at the accuracy reports that I put out every week, I haven't released one for Washington yet. I think just by eye test, he did a little bit better than he had the last couple of weeks. But the last couple of weeks, he was putrid. He was completing like less than 20% of passes or being accurate. I shouldn't say completed. He was being accurate on his delivery on like 20% of his passes over 10 yards. It was some kind of ridiculous number of when you look at those numbers, and you have to, caveat being, this is my eye grading whether or not the passes were accurate. I don't know the play call. I don't know any of that thing. But looking at the film, and some of these are so egregious, there's no possible way I got them wrong. But he rarely, over 10 yards, throws an accurate pass. His mechanics are completely screwed up. His confidence, his timing. If it's accurate, it's not on the right timing. It's always something, and he's not getting better under this regime. So either you have to, in these next 9 games, say, okay, Dak is completely lost and we trust this staff that if they had a better quarterback that they could do better. Or you have to say, I still think Dak has something in them, which we've heard Jerry Jones say. Jerry Jones makes no bones about it. He believes that Dak Prescott could be that guy. You have to say that we have to figure out a better way to coach him, to give him a system to play in than what we're doing. And if that means that they're going to give Jason Garrett another year and make him find another play caller, so be it. It's not my hope, but I'll understand. But I still, at that point, will not let Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones off the hook. And you know why? They have to catch a fade right now.
It is.
Because they pulled the flim-flam on Cowboys Nation.
Not the flim-flam.
Plymouth Rock landed on Cowboys Nation. Son.
You've been bamboozled.
Bamboozled.
Now,
listen, there's plenty of justifications for why the Cowboys need Amari Cooper. That is not debatable. They needed somebody that brings what Cooper brings to them. But no, Jerry Jones, Amari Cooper, in the scenario that he was in Oakland, with the trade deadline coming, was not worth your number one pick. On talent alone, Cooper represents a number one pick. He was a number 4 or 5 overall pick in his draft. He's obviously a first-round talent. He showed that in the first 2 years. Based on the situation that Oakland was in, they were in no position to demand a first-round pick from you. The reason Jerry Jones paid the first-round pick price, he paid the gold price and not the iron price, is because they needed to distract everybody from how freaking horrible the Dallas Cowboys looked on Sunday. He pulled the distraction. Excuse me?
You're saying they're playing politics is what you're saying.
When is Jerry Jones not playing politics, son?
Fair enough. Swing
that's how he made billions. You can't knock the guy for it. He made billions because he's a talker. He's one of those guys that can convince pretty much anybody for everything. But when you grow up in the D.C. area and you're used to hearing these people put the spin control on, that's why I said in my tweet, I said, screw the spin control. Here's the real reason why they made this trade. They had to buy the time to figure out all of the things that we're talking about. Is Dak the quarterback? When do I want to move on from Lenahan? When do I want to move on from Garrett? All of that needs to be played out. And he bought patience. And the price he paid for it was the number one pick. On Tuesday morning, after everybody was pissed off about the way the Cowboys ended another game, second time in 3 weeks with bad clock management, bad aggression, no balls, whatever you want to call what Jason Garrett did against Houston and against Washington on the road. On Tuesday morning, less than 36 hours after the conclusion of the debacle, nobody was talking about that game anymore. Nobody was talking about firing Jason Garrett. Nobody was talking about Dak Prescott being like absolutely not having what it takes in order to be the future quarterback. All of that got pushed to the side, and he bought patience, and the price of it was a number one pick. Now, instead of everybody getting on these guys, we're saying, well, let's see what happens with Cooper. Now that they went a number one, we said it ourselves on this show. We're going to wait 4 weeks. In order to see whether or not we're going to take away play calling from Scott Linehan. We should have been having that conversation on Tuesday, but we were distracted. Right. We were distracted by the fact that they spent a number one pick, and the whole talk was whether it worth a number one pick or not. By the time this thing blows up, if it goes bad, it's going to be a footnote in history that they gave up a number one pick for Amari Cooper. Because at that point, if everything needs to be blown up, you're talking about a brand new coach, possibly a brand new quarterback. Ain't nobody going to really be worried about the number one pick that they spent. They're going to say the Cowboys were just trying last hurrah before they set the ship out to sea. Let's do one last ditch effort to keep this thing going, guys. But if it doesn't work, that's going to be a footnote. Because you're going to be talking about how much do we have to pay Lincoln Riley to come from Oklahoma and cross the Red River and get down and be the Dallas coach, because he's making $5 million now, and as a rookie head coach, he's going to be getting like $7 million from the Cowboys. So all of that is being pushed off. He bought himself patience, and that's why he's such a brilliant strategist and businessman. You can clown him all you want to. You're talking about Jerry Jones. You're not talking about the people he employs.
Right.
Now we've returned to that conversation later in the week, but we were about to have a bye week coming off of that game. Son, we would have destroyed every ounce. And we know the Cowboys are sensitive. We know their players are sensitive. We would have destroyed every ounce of their confidence if we had 14 days, however long, between games in order to pick apart that team and that loss.
Oh, it was coming. It was coming. It was some, you know, we were cracking knuckles and tapping mics. It was coming.
But you know what I did on Tuesday? I wrote 7 different articles about Amari Cooper.
Oh yeah, it's been 2 or 3 consecutive Cooper holidays.
Exactly. Like
this is a national holiday for Amari Cooper, in as far as Cowboys Nation is concerned.
There you go, and that's why Jerry Jones has to catch this fade, because I see what you did, old man. I see what you did.
And not the hustle.
I cannot the hustle. I'm really not mad at you, man, but you still got to catch this fade because of the people that didn't realize what you were doing, and I'm talking to them.
Well played, Jerry Jones. And see, for me, I agree with you in the capacity of, he politicked the situation, yeah. Right? He most certainly did. The only thing I differ on you with is I believe that once I started digging in, because my ceiling, my personal tolerance when I wrote my trade option piece and Amari Cooper was my A1, my personal tolerance stopped at a second round pick. I would not have given above a second round pick. But they went ahead and they gave the first. So I started digging into it with an open mind and wanted to see if I was going to be justified in basically scraping them for giving up the first round pick, or if I could justify it. And looking at the first round picks for wide receiver over the last 4 years, it's extremely justified. You look at history, the recent history, it justifies it. You look at the coming draft class and it justifies it. And none of those guys coming out right now are consensus first rounders. And none of them are, or arguably none of them are better right now than Amari Cooper is as far as being a productive NFL number one wide receiver. So basically what you did was you didn't get Calvin Ridley. So you went and got, you gave up a first round pick in 2019 for a guy that's 24 years old, same age as Calvin Ridley, almost a year younger than Dak Prescott. So makes sense. So I think it makes a lot of sense for the team. It gives them a chance to turn things around, gives the Cowboys a chance to evaluate Dak Prescott, gives them a chance to, on a last ditch effort, to see if Scott Linehan is going to be the guy or if he needs to get the hell out of here. And I think he needs to get out of here. But I think some of the, you know, the positive, the additional positive for them was that it changes the narrative. So that's where I agree with you there. So it definitely changes the narrative. That works in their favor. I don't think that was their prevailing thought when doing it, but they are benefiting from it, and they knew that they would. So, yeah,
no,
there comes you, wily, wily billionaire you.
I'm not saying that they did it strictly for the distraction. What I'm saying is the distraction element accelerated their timeline. Now, sure. Obviously, you wanted to get him in before the bye week and get him as many practices as possible and all that sort of thing. But I believe that if they were sitting there haggling and saying, we don't believe we need to pay a first-round pick, which is what they should have been saying, which I, what I hope they were saying, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt that they at least had thoughts that a first-round pick was overpaying for this guy. They simply said, we're paying a tax to do this now. I don't see them making that move if they won on Sunday. I don't.
And
not for a first.
Yeah, and there you go. There you go. Not for what they paid in compensation in that first round pick, but they did state that they, you know, it's not something that was triggered by the loss of, oh, by the loss to the Washington Redskins. They, you know, they have, well, hey, no, not necessarily, because, you know, McKenzie, the Raiders GM, he noted specifically before the Cowboys even started talking. And true, they could be in cahoots when it comes to spinning the news however they want to, because, hey, you know, what's the narrative between millionaires, right?
Exactly.
But McKenzie did come out and say that the Cowboys, that Stephen Jones specifically, had reached out to him prior to the game. So they had already supposedly had conversations about going for Amari Cooper. And now, realistically, I believe that the loss to Washington forced them into the first round as far as compensation.
Exactly.
But, you know, so, yeah, to that point, I absolutely agree. But I do think they had started conversations before, because think about it. Like we said earlier, they went and got Bryce Butler. That obviously didn't pan out, to say the least. Okay, Allen Hurns is still not panning out.
Thompson ain't panning out.
Tavon Austin was inconsistent and inconsistently used, and now he's out for the foreseeable future. And I still think he's going to land on injured reserve. I think they're just biding time there, but, you know, whatever. I think he's going to end up on injured reserve. So you got all these new acquisitions that are not working out. You were going to have to, you know, make some kind of a trade for a wide receiver, whether it was, you know, Cooper or Devontae Parker out of Miami, or Demaryius Thomas out of Denver. Something was going to have to shake. I'm glad they went with my A1. I would have stopped at a first round pick, but they went, I would have stopped at the second round pick. I'm sorry, but they went first rounder, and I can justify it in my mind and not selling myself on the BS. I mean, literally, if you go and read the article I got up on the website, it's right there in front of you. The recent draft class, the draft class coming, none of these guys were or are better than Amari Cooper is right now. So pull the trigger. Let's see if Scott Linehan and Dak Prescott can make it pop.
You know, Scott Linehan won a power struggle in the offseason. I think a lot of times we fail to talk about, just imagine what that was like at the Star in Frisco. There were people making power plays, sitting in offices I would imagine all of the offices are on the same hallway. You're not going to have the wide receiver coach 10 doors down from the running back coach, and around the corner is where the offensive coordinator sits. I imagine that all those guys are basically in the general area, and they were trying to make power moves to be Jason Garrett's top lieutenant. And Scott Linehan won. And then Scott Linehan went out and hired fucking Paul Alexander to run his offensive line.
Woo! Yeah. We got to talk about that. Listen, gotta talk about that. Oh my God.
Now, we've been getting along recently when it comes to Catch This Fade. I know our listeners, you know, this, you subscribe on iTunes, you have it on whatever podcast you listen to, Blurberry and all the other stuff, Android. Whatever you need, we got you covered. You can subscribe to Catch This Fade. Go search for Cowboys Barbershop, and we'll come up first, and make sure you subscribe to that link. But what in the hell happened that made them think that going from what Frank Pollock had done for them, and Frank Pollock deserves a lot of blame, whether he was a fall guy or not, but I'm going to blame him for having Chaz Green playing left tackle last year and ruining Dak Prescott, ruining the one thing that Dak Prescott had, which was confidence in himself. That's all gone out the window. So I understand why Pollock was frowned upon. But if you were going to go to this, what Paul Alexander doing, you might as well just have kept Pollock, man. I'd have felt better about that.
I agree. This is a huge step back, dude. Like, oh, my God.
Let me give you
the stats. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not in hindsight. This is not hindsight. Both KD and myself had definitive questions about this hiring the moment the hiring occurred. So nothing we're saying is in hindsight, aside from, you know, the facts that we're giving you, or KD's about to drop on you right now. But we're not hindsight on this one. We didn't like it at first, and now you're seeing why we did. So give it to him, KD.
Listen, we're going to have to combine our super friends forces here and go tag team off the rope on this one. Because I know that you want to get some of this Paul Alexander action. Listen, adjusted line yards is Football Outsiders metric, which basically says how much of a player, how much of a running back's yardage is attributable to what the offensive line is doing. They basically give a measure of a portion of the yards gained on a run in a certain distance to the offensive line. Paul Alexander had the Cowboys going from, let me pull up this stat and make sure that I say it 100% correctly. This year, they are number 13 in adjusted line yards. Last year, they were fourth. For the best offensive line in football, for the best running game in football, to be middle of the pack when it comes to adjusted line yards is unconscionable. Adjusted sack rate. Now, we all know all sacks aren't on the offensive line. Some are on the quarterback. Dak Prescott holds the ball far too long. We know that. He also did that last year, however. Last year in adjusted sack rate, which basically says how many sacks per dropback, so teams that run the ball a lot, their sacks are weighted heavier, they were still a respectable number 13 in adjusted sack rate last year. They are now number 27 in adjusted sack
rate.
27. The quote-unquote best offensive line in football is ranked number 27 in giving up sacks. And it's the same skittish quarterback back there behind center. Now, the Cowboys essentially traded Frank Pollock because he went to the Cincinnati Bengals to take the job there, and Paul Alexander came to Dallas. The Bengals moved from number 20 in adjusted sack rate to number 8 this year with our man Frank Pollock.
And the evidence is right there in front of you. I mean, look at everything you pointed out, and I'm going to piggyback on it. And let's talk about now we know what Paul Alexander looks like through 7 games for the Cowboys. Okay. So for those saying, oh, well, you guys are only beating up on Paul Alexander because the offensive line isn't playing well, and, you know, you probably like the hire, and no, because number one, we got receipts. But also, let me point out some things that the Cowboys knew about Paul Alexander before they hired him.
Okay? Other than the ketchup bottle.
Exactly. Other than the ketchup bottle. Good grief. Why was that a national headline? I don't understand. But anyway, and plus ketchup is trash, so for me, that was just a double, you know. That was a double whammy of hell. Preach. No, like a double whammy of get the hell out of my face. But Paul Alexander, in 23 seasons with the Cincinnati Bengals, I'm going to read you And because I want maximum impact here, I'm going to read you his offensive line rankings with the Cincinnati Bengals over 23 years. Okay, starts off great. First year, second. Okay, but I'm going to assume that that was a bit of an inheritance from the previous offensive coordinator, because that's typically how it goes in the NFL. Okay, so second, 18th, 21st, 13th, 17th, 11th, 26th, 24th, 29th, 9th, 27th. 19th, 18th, 18th, 6th, 13th, 13th, 31st. He was 31st. He had a 31st ranked offensive line with the Cincinnati Bengals in 2017 when the Cowboys called this man and said, "We want you to help us make sure that Ezekiel Elliott rushes for another 1,600 yards and 15 or 16 touchdowns. We want you, Mr. 31st ranked offensive line coach, to come in and fix our left guard issue, which is going to involve drafting a rookie. So you're going to have to insert the rookie and make sure that the gel is there." So right now, Paul Alexander is saying, "Well, hey, you promised me Travis Frederick." Okay, fair enough. However, what we're not going to do is pretend that Joe Looney has been trashed. That's what we're not going to do. What we are going to do is say, can the offensive line improve? Yes, they can. But they're not trash like people say, "Oh, well, Dak doesn't have time to throw." Yes, he does. He has one of the time to throw, however you want to word that, the longest time to throw from snap to throw in the NFL. He's taking too long to get rid of the ball, so he's not really helping the offensive line. But when it comes to Paul Alexander, number one, he ran mostly a power blocking scheme up in Cincinnati. The Cowboys are designed for a zone blocking scheme. You got zone blockers on the offensive line. That's what made them all pros. You got an all pro running back who's a zone running back. If you wanted a power blocking scheme, why'd you fire Darren McFadden?
And you know, you brought up the perfect name for the situation that I wanted to bring up. A lot of people responded to Paul Alexander's slander with the question of whether or not the Cowboys would make a move and fire him midseason and risk changing the scheme. But they changed the scheme in 2015. When Darren McFadden took over as a primary running back, we have the Cowboys offensive line telling us, yes, we switched to being more of a power gap scheme than we were zone. It basically flip-flopped in the percentage of plays that we ran from each. They're versatile enough to do both. They just do zone blocking a whole lot better. And Paul Alexander has incorporated some zone principles in what he's done. He's been in the league for 30 years. He knows how to coach zone. It's just not his forte. It's not his preference. Right. But whatever he did to try to drill into these players that they needed to make a change in their technique in order to do things his way, and he was improving them, he has screwed with their heads. And it's mostly Lyle Collins. I know when we watch Tyron Smith struggled this year, we think that he's regressed a lot. Things are different. He's looked worse in the time that he's lost, but he's actually on a similar pace when it comes to both sacks and pressures allowed from what he was last year. I think we can have a conversation about this another time, because I don't think that his skill is deteriorating, but I think he's still injured. And I'm worried that he's always injured. But he's basically playing at the same level as he was last year. The difference is Collins. Collins now has 5 holding penalties in 7 games. For all of the grief that we gave him in the start of last year when he was facing the murderer's row of defensive ends on that side, he only got called for holding 3 times all of last year playing 16 games. And he has 5 in 7 games. You can't tell me that's not because he's sitting here confused, learning how to play right tackle, and listening to all these changes. He had 1 year with Pollock. They switched him up. He's not taking well to what Alexander is teaching him. So he's grabbing and holding all the time. And when he's not grabbing and holding, he's being pushed into Dak Prescott. He's on skates.
Right. And it's asking a whole lot, to say the least, of Lyle Collins, because you brought up an excellent point just now. It was just last season wherein he was moved from left guard to right tackle, and he did very well in the move to right tackle. And now, in his second year at right tackle, you bring in a guy like Alexander, and you can tell there is an issue with the technique that's being coached to him and his apparent inability to adopt said technique. And then we go back to Tyron Smith. Jason Garrett says Tyron Smith is completely healthy. The jury's out on that one. But the reason I haven't, and I was set to pin an article on Tyron this week, as a matter of fact, because I'm falling, I've been looking closely at him over the past seven games and longer to see if it's actually regression or if it's the induction of or the addition of Paul Alexander, you know, to the fold. You know, is it because he has he being Tyron, is it because he has a rookie in Connor Williams to the right of him instead of a, you know, more polished, although not necessarily as good in the moment, but a more polished veteran right now at the left guard position? But I don't know yet, and I need to gather more data before I give a definitive on what I think is going on with Tyron Smith. But there is a step back happening here. I just don't know if it's because of him. So because I don't know that it's because of him, if you're asking me to right now, before I gather more data, hey, Pat, if you had to choose who to blame between a perennial All-Pro that's still in his mid to late 20s or the offensive line coach who was ranked 31st at his job in the NFL when the Cowboys hired him, come on, man. Alexander got to catch this fade. I don't know you like that, man.
I don't know you, bro.
I don't know you like that, man. And then when the Cowboys did hire him, the headline story in hiring Paul Alexander wasn't what he can bring to the team. That's not what the headline story was. When Chris Richard was hired, it was all about what he brings to the team. It was 120% about his energy, the scheme he's bringing, the names that he helped put into the potential, you know, potentially put into the Hall of Fame once their careers are done. Your Earl Thomases, your Cam Chancellors, your Richard Shermans of the world, right? Your Bobby Wagners and players like that. But when Paul Alexander was hired, all we talked about was ketchup. That's what we talked about.
Man, okay? We should have seen. Oh, wait, we did see all of this coming.
We did. So at the end of the day, I'm not even going to keep kicking the dead horse. I feel like when it comes to Paul Alexander and us forming like Voltron against him right now, and it's quite justifiable. I feel like that scene from The Simpsons when Krusty was beating up on the criminal.
He's dead already!
So, Paul Alexander, I didn't believe you were the man for the job when you were hired in January. More proof is in the pudding mid-season. I don't believe that things are going to get definitively better going forward. They might get better in spurts. But I think that he is a microcosm of the issues we're having with Scott Linehan. See how this all comes full circle? It's a microcosm of the issues we're having with Scott Linehan, which is inconsistency and inability to replicate success. Paul Alexander was not a successful offensive line coach in the NFL over a consistent basis over a nearly 2.5-decade stint. Cowboys, for some reason, saw that he was second worst at his job and said, hey, we want you. And now they're paying for it. And the cowboy that more or less hired him is Scott Linehan. That's the one who said, that's the guy I want coaching my offensive line. Took it to Jason Garrett. Garrett approved it. See, this is what's going to probably end up getting Garrett fired. He's going to have to cut that tie between him and Scott Linehan.
I just had a brainstorm.
Hit me.
What if the fact was that nobody else wanted to work for Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan?
Ooh.
I mean, just think about it. If you're offensive line coach and you're up and coming, I mean, I know you get a job, whatever the case may be, if you feel confident in your situation, and there at that point there probably weren't a lot of offensive line coaches with experience, and you were worried about, you know, you gave Kellen Moore the quarterback job. He has no experience, and maybe you were worried about bringing in somebody that didn't have a lot of experience. But what if the only name that said yes was Paul Alexander because they thought that the Cowboys coaching staff was not long for Dallas.
And that would make a lot of sense because if you look at the exodus that was occurring, whether it be willfully from the coaches themselves,
like
Matt Eberflus, or if you look at the fact that coaches were being walked away from, like Frank Pollock, it just was not a great time for anyone who wants to be in a long-term situation to join the team.
You really want to go sign on to move your family to Dallas if you think the regime is only going to be around for one more year? I mean, if you're an old guy that has 30 years in the league, you're like, screw it. I like Texas. I'll go down there for a year. But if you're an up-and-comer, you know what I'm saying? If you're an up-and-comer and you're really playing the market and you really have confidence that you, one day you're going to be a future head coach, you want on your resume that you worked in Dallas for one year and got fired?
You get out of there. I mean, you don't even go down in the first place. And ironically, this is we mentioned Alan Hearns a couple of times quickly on the broadcast. But now that you bring up that point, look at what's happening with Alan Hearns from a player standpoint. That's in the same breath, right? Because Alan Hearns could have went to the New York Jets, for example, for more money, but he chose to come to the Cowboys. He drank the Kool-Aid. They were offering him, took less money. Because he believed that the scheme fit his skill set and that he would reascend to his Pro Bowl status. And he's absolutely – his numbers are trash. His numbers are trash in 2018. His stock is falling precipitously. I don't think he has any trade value right now, if any. And if they were to cut him in the next few months, which I think is going to happen because he'll be entering the second year of his two-year, I think, $12 million deal if they keep him on. But you got to pay Amari Cooper $13.9 if you don't extend him, and you got other people to pay. You got DeMarcus Lawrence to pay, and maybe you need to figure out what's going on with Dak. But I think Hearns is a perfect example.
I'm glad that you brought up the point about what Alan Hearns is making and what a Cooper are making. I do have an article up on Cowboys Wire that explores how the Cowboys, with their cap space for next year, should navigate the wide receiver room. It involves cutting Hearns. Obviously, it involves cutting Terrence Williams. Basically should be able to sign back Cole Beasley and Tavon Austin for the 2019 salary cap hit that Williams and Hearns will be vacating. They are $8.5 million together. You could easily give both of those guys, Beasley 3 years and Tavon Austin 2 years or whatever the case may be, but you could easily give those guys contracts that will slot in for that $8.5 million worth of salary cap space and still have money to do the other things that we would like to see, give Elliott his early extension, even if you have to franchise tag DeMarcus Lawrence again, bring back in possibly David Irving, bring in one of those big free agents. Go check that out. It's going to be my pinned article over at CowboysWire.com. Make sure you check that out. If you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter at KD Drummond NFL. You can also hit up my protege, Patrick with no C Walker.
You voice tried. Of the star. I'm going to have to cut you for some salary cap. You're trying to have to cut you and bring in a big money free agent in 2019.
Man, listen, I am irreplaceable in this offense, unlike some of these other guys out here.
All right. Okay, I hear you, Terrence.
I'm basically in this bitch. All right, that's it. We're out of here. Yeah.
Terrence. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure that you download the CBS Sports app if you're mobile, if you're sitting at your desktop. Make sure you go to dal.247sports.com. That'll route you to the correct site as well. Like us on Facebook, Dallas Cowboys on 247 Sports. Follow me on Twitter at Voice of the Star. And we're done fading them for now, man. We're going into the bye week. Let's take a mental break and let's reconvene next week and get ready for some Tennessee Titans.
That's it. We're out of here. Salute. It's hostile. And a good dog, come check your dog. Spend a couple meal, no stress at all. Big bank roll, no checks at all. FYI, I'm flexing, y'all. Game A1 professional. You small ball like golf balls. I basketball, go ask your bra. Tear her legs open, sesame. Abracadabra, she with me. Like Tata. While I Gucci, Louis, Strivers, Prada. Fish to the night, parking lot, leave mad. Too bad. Then I got a mighty man. The way I made the work was still calling man. Sipping on the purple in the other drinking magic. While I magic, while I magic, while I magic, while I magic. Just telling out the parking lot, leaving magic. Sipping on the purple in the other drinking magic. On my way to Aspen's, I forgot to do my tax. Hold on. Call my accountant, he gon' make it do magic. Had to get a driver, jet to drop me at the airport. Way I smoke the blunt.